This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, and now Oban and Avena return for their fifth and final story, and things have never been more dangerous. They have survived the chaos of Cash, explored the dark mysteries of the Ruby Ruins, protected the Obsidian Mind, and obtained the Emerald Strength. But can they survive the Amethyst Shattering? Diamond Stained, Ruby Ruins, Obsidian Mind, and Emerald Strength are all out on Amazon and free in Kindle Unlimited. And on July 7th, the finale, Amethyst Shattered, comes out. Today, I'm joined by Eric Shapiro, the author of the dark thriller Red Dennis.
How are you doing today, Eric?
Hey, James. How you doing? Pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing good, too. So, I always like to start things out with some fun questions.
Sure.
So, does pineapple belong on pizza?
No. You know, not for me because I have heartburn. It's funny. I actually have it right now because I get nervous every time I do an interview. So, I'm having like the – I can tell you straight up that it's – for me, at least, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, no. I had heartburn so bad once I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, they had to I at one time had an EKG. And interesting, funnily enough, it was the same day I had done a webcast, like a TV-ish interview with cameras. And mid-interview, I think I just talked so fast I wasn't breathing properly. And they're like, that's acid reflux. They did the EKG. I was like 30 years old. You know, the odds were pretty low. But.
Yeah, well, I have high blood pressure, so it was. I was freaked out, but they did two EKGs on me, and I was solid. But yeah, that was a scary day.
I hear you.
Anyways, if you could travel to any place in the world, where would it be?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I've never been to Asia. I'm interested in Japan.
That's the first thing
that springs to mind, like Tokyo, and just because I've seen it in so many movies, it looks really cool.
Yeah, Tokyo is a lot of fun.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
That's the only place in Asia I've been.
Nice. Yeah. Asia, you know, I'm 42. I just turned 42. And Asia's like, I wouldn't say like the only place I haven't been. It's probably the most, I think Asia and Africa are like the major spots, but I've been in a lot of other places in the world. But whenever I take a long trip, I think Asia is next on the list.
All right. So, when did you know you wanted to be a writer?
That's a good question. This is a strange one because my mother is a very talented painter and sculptor. And when I was very little, so she's always been very creative and she's very unconventional and she's a very loving mother. So I don't want to make it sound like she was strict or anything, but she had a no boredom policy in the home. So like you weren't, her least favorite thing to hear was us saying, my sister and I saying we were bored. So from the youngest age, the solution was, you know, she would say, you have to write a story. I don't want to hear you're bored. Like, it's the policy being like, you know, if you're bored, you're boring. Like, you know, figure out something to do to entertain yourself, you know? So I started writing stories when I was like 4 or 5 and I can't remember learning how to write. So it's a weird thing. So I was almost like one of those basketball kids that was like put out there and I have no, it's strange because subsequent to writing, like I've done acting, I've done filmmaking. Those are things I picked up and I can remember getting into them. But writing is sort of like just one of those things. It feels like a native kind of thing that I've like done since before I can remember. And then as time went on, I moved to LA to be an actor like 18 years ago. And my problem with that was a couple things. Like I'm Jewish, but I look very Italian. So they would, I got called in to play gangsters all the time. So I was very easily typecast. And I also couldn't keep my weight low. Like LA actors are all buff and like Panthers. And my, you know, right away after college, I was like 10, 15 pounds overweight. So then I sort of shifted to writing. I was like, well, writing is always something I love, always something I've done. And then after I made that decision, little by little, it accumulated into a career.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So what led you to publish your first work?
That was an interesting thing. It was right around the same time I'm talking about in LA. So it was like right out of college. Yep. And I have, in addition, it's funny, all these things are coming up. In addition to heartburn, I have OCD. Okay. So I was diagnosed with that in college. And I went to LA and the first job I got was with a company called Showfax. So they faxed what's called sides to actors, like pieces of scripts to actors for auditions.
Okay.
And it was, you know, back in the days of fax machines. It was like the year 2000. So the Showfax hired me for a job, but there was a 2-month wait before I started. So I was like, all right, I'm going to write one or two short stories a week during that wait. And then that's what I did. So I had a short story collection about mental illness. Each story focused on a different mental illness because I had accumulated a lot of firsthand and you know, reading oriented research around that topic, you know, having gone through it with OCD. So then that was the first publication called Short of a Picnic.
All right. If it's not too personal, how has OCD affected your writing?
It's interesting. More and more as I get older, I realize it affects it like in every which way. It's interesting because I always felt as I've been writing. So I've done a lot of ghostwriting. That's how in my adult life, that's most of the time in my adult life. That's how I've made my living. And currently for the past couple of years, my wife and I run our local newspaper. So it's switched, but it's always been writing oriented. But throughout that time, I've written under my own name, 8 books. So it's been that short story collection, 5 novellas, and then a novel and also a nonfiction book. Right. So that's over the course of like 18 years. And I realized that all those books, like each time I was writing one or I had the idea, I always thought I was like drastically switching genres. I'm like, okay, now I'm doing sci-fi. Now I'm doing horror. Now I'm doing straight up just literature. Now I'm doing crime fiction. I mean, I always thought I was like, I had no brand because it was all over the place. But I realized that all of them in a very overt, explicit way are about madness. Like the protagonist is always either neurotic or psychotic. And that I realize that informs every single thing I do. And I actually am kind of allergic to protagonists that are too like mentally healthy. Like if they're too on the level or wholesome or just like, maybe they're fundamentally decent, like they're good people. I mean, that depends on the book. But in general, you know, their mental health is shaky at a minimum. So it's really imbued the content. And then also the way I approach it is very wired down, it almost to the point where it's painful. I didn't take it as far with the ghostwriting because I was on assignment and it's to the client's approval. So I'm working with the client on a piece. But when I'm by myself, like I so meticulously wrench every sentence, like I go over and over, like every comma and semicolon, like, and I really drive myself crazy. And at a certain point, I'm like, all right, it feels like it's squeaking to the point where it's going to snap. And I have to just like not ever look at it again. And I think it's done. Like, there's a lot of neurosis in the process.
I'm ADD, so I kind of have the opposite issue where it's hard for me to not the writing. Writing is actually very easy. I can write just all day, but the editing and world building stuff and that stuff, I have to like it's like it's a chore, and I just want to get it done. But I know like and so I have to be really careful in my editing because I don't want to rush it. But like there's a part of me that wants to rush it. Right.
Like because of the ADD, you sort of like want to get on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it's like something I have to fight.
Well, how does the ADD, how does that affect the world building per se? Like,
I just like I want it's all in my head, but then I got to put it down into notes.
Oh, okay.
And it's just so tedious. It's like, and now this happened because if I keep it all in my head, it's going to not. I need it. Like if I have it in notes, it'll be concrete. If I keep it in my head, I'm going to misremember things. Like, I think I have it right, but it's like your memory is kind of plastic and it'll shift. Even like your own story notes can get kind of shifted around if you don't put them down. So it's just tedious.
Oh, gotcha. It's just like the process of making it finite because your mind is so active.
Right.
It's like, you feel like you're almost undercutting yourself by fixing it and putting it in a fixed form.
Yeah. And I might, cause you never know. Cause sometimes, like if I haven't put it in the story yet, it's, you know, always subject to change. If I think it'll make logical sense and I haven't, I'm not contradicting myself. But.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Cause it's also, you're driving different gears, like based on which part of what you're describing. I mean, you have every right to go back and I guess you have to sort of alternate which part of yourself you're leaning on.
Yeah. But like writing, the only thing that keeps me from writing is like, you know, my mind just gets tired.
Oh, I hear you.
You know, it is mental energy. And my fingers, you know, you spend spend like 8 hours typing and your fingers don't feel good.
Oh, no question. Yeah, I've been there all the way. I mean, with the ghostwriting, I was routinely doing like 2,500 pages a year, which for me, I hear all kinds of stories with writers that, you know, for them, that's like not particularly hard. But for me, I'm kind of a minimalist. Yeah. Like, I'm very stark. I was like, that was very extreme. My wrists were hurting. And then I feel generally like you're saying 8 hours. I really can't do more than 4. And, And it's so funny, in the ghostwriting days, it was taboo. I never admitted that to my clients because they weren't paying me by the hour. They were paying me per the job. But still, I didn't want to like sound like I was only working a half day. And I wasn't. I was doing other parts of the business, too. But yeah, generally, my brain turns to like a mashed potato after like 4 hours.
Yeah, well, like I have to take, I can't, I can go like an hour and then I'll have to take like a 5-10 minute break and then do another hour and scratch my stuff.
Oh, I totally understand. And another thing I want to throw in there also on the same discussion is, it's interesting how you talked about like hitting that sweet spot. Like, you, of course, you have that open door to go back and revise, and you can go back into brainstorming like mid process. Like with me, what's really interesting is the main driver of my writing is emotion. It's all like, you know, I want the emotions to be really tangible. So if I feel it while I'm writing it, I know it'll transfer to the reader. So I sort of whip myself into that state, right? So if I edit it too much, the emotion, I murder the emotion. So I know with that OCD, I have to sort of like, I have to like fucking stop myself from, I'm sorry. That was my big question. I forgot to ask. Am I okay cursing?
It's not hosted on my side. Let's try to keep cursing to a minimum.
Okay. Yeah. You can, there's just,
but one. It's okay. If something slips through. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. I have to just like regulate myself and be like, all right, if you edited this too much, you're going to kill the feelings. So I have to just like find that sweet spot where it's like just tight enough, but it's not so tight that it becomes bland, you know?
Yeah, no, mine's very emotional. That's what, at least that's what all my readers tell me. And I definitely I get into the emotion. Like when I'm writing, when I've killed characters or something, like I killed one character once and it wrecked me for like a day.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cause
Because I wasn't killing him, it was I was in the headspace of his wife, and he died right in front of her very abruptly. Oh, man. Like And then I had to like, and so I was just in her headspace, and it's I needed it because I had to break the character, and put her on a very dark path.
Did you know you knew it was about to happen right before it happened?
Oh, I had planned it. I knew when I started writing the book. I'm building up to it, and I'm dreading it more and more, because like he was a character I really liked, and I did I was actually trying, as I wrote that book, I kept trying to find ways out of killing him, to be honest.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah,
because I had to fight that impulse.
I completely understand. It makes sense, because you and I, I'm sure, me with OCD, you with ADD, I'm sure we're both very sensitive. And just like our nerve endings are like raw and open. So it's like, that emotional connection. I mean, that's the thing that keeps me interested in writing. It's just like the psychology of the characters, just the emotional aliveness I can share.
I like
stuff.
Almost all my characters, even the terrible ones.
Say that last part again.
Probably how I make my villain sympathetic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. I always go to great lengths to humanize everyone. I mean, but then there are some I could... that's a really interesting way of framing it, that you like them. Like, I always feel close to them, but I also always feel with the protagonist, more times than not, I'm exposing a kind of awkward side of myself, or like maybe a very uncomfortable side of myself. And then I always, it's not like I ever regret it, but I always do feel a little like, okay, yep, there it is. I mean, I wouldn't be necessarily revealing this much person to person or in real life or socially necessarily, but... You know, this material, this stuff that this person's made of is in there. So I do feel a close connection, but then sometimes I'm like, ouch, like this person's a bit much for me.
I think it, I think it helps like knowing my shadow self from Jung, you know, knowing what are my terrible parts of myself and the things that I need to watch out for. And just knowing that those are a part of me helps me, I guess, writing terrible characters.
Well said. Yeah, that's a big thing. It's so crazy. You and I have a lot in common. The Jungian shadow is a big thing for me too, and it's also a very healthy way to contextualize all that, because nothing bothers me more than writers that suppress their shadow. I'm like, well, I mean, not to be judgmental, but I don't know how eager I am to read that stuff. I'm like, I don't want a Hallmark Disney vision of reality. Like it's like we're all of us are suffering in some way every day. It seems like now more so than ever. So it's like I read fiction to feel less lonely. I don't want to feel more lonely because you're telling me everything's great.
Yeah. I mean, things are never 100% great in my stories, but I hear you. I'm still like to keep things I've been on more on the positive side.
Oh, I hear you. And I was taking a look at you because you and I just became Facebook friends, and you're co-writing stuff with Michael Evan, right?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. That's and it sounds really exciting.
It is. Anyway, so let's talk about your new book, Red Dennis.
Oh, cool.
So your main character is Dennis Fordham, and he appears to be a man that has it all, but he is about to descend into violent madness. Yes.
You got it. That's the deal. So, and it's funny because I was primarily thinking of him a moment ago when I was talking about going to those awkward places, and since writing these books over the years, it always feels like I've been very busy. I'm always busy with this or that, like writing a script or, you know, I've done productions and stuff. But the gaps between my books keep getting longer. And it's like, I have a feeling when I look back at the body of work, it's going to look like, oh, for a decade, he was doing nothing. But the truth is, I'm always up to something. But between Red Dennis and the previous one, it was like 7 years. So the previous one was a novella called Love and Zombies, which was actually about a sex addict. But the sex addict, at least you can spin that in such a way where there's humor and he could still be kind of cool, you know, because he has a problem that in a way is enviable. But, so they're another mental health example. When I got to Red Dennis, I was of an age where I could depict him in a midlife crisis. Like, it was coming from a lot of that anxiety and depression I was experiencing around being 40. And also, I had just stopped ghostwriting and switched to the newspaper, which was a positive stress, but still a stress. I mean, it was still the end of a really long, you know, period of doing one thing and, you know, shifting gears and, you know, like kind of a strange age to be doing something brand new and something I wanted too, because the newspaper has a, you know, a healthy audience. Like, it's great to have that attention, which was new to me because I'd more been a ghostwriter. I have these books, which are fringy and not terribly commercial. But Red Dennis came from that sort of swerve. I was sort of like in that 40-year-old malaise and also, like, you know, just reacting to the culture wars and, like, he's a very aggrieved, he has political grievances. I don't know how much you want to get into all that stuff because it can become a little delicate, but he becomes radicalized and he wants to kind of lash out. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, radicalization seems to be the theme of our times right now.
You got it. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting, like, depending on where you are in the spectrum, you know, your focus could be on radicalization in the sense that you're going to be radicalized to become a neo-Nazi or an Islamic, you know, fundamentalist or whatnot. But then, there's the other end of things where if you're on the left, like, for example, Dennis, the character Dennis is on the left, and he's so sick of, you know, being criticized for his race, his, you know, his gender, his orientation, that he starts snapping on that level, which for me was interesting. Like, and I am
familiar with sort of the manosphere, that culture that does around that. I listen to lots of weird stuff on YouTube.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, totally. Enough said. And it's interesting how both of us are sort of treading lightly because it becomes so potentially inflammatory, like, to talk about. Which is kind of where I was coming from. Like, he definitely, it's so interesting, like, talking about the manosphere or incel culture or whatnot. Like, I could see people within that that envelope of culture or subculture seeing him as an antihero. But from my perspective, like, I'm on the left, like, he definitely, again, he is my Jungian shadow. He's definitely an aspect of my personality. There's no question, but he's much more, I continuously am editing myself from cursing. He's much more of a drip, and he's much more bland, and he's like, and I, you know, I definitely hold him in judgment, but I also, you know, see where he's coming from. And it's interesting because I'm Jewish, which kind of offsets me against the culture wars. It, like, puts me in a weird category, but I'm also white. So I also, like, it's interesting, some of the criticism that comes from the left of me has gotten under my skin, and I understand where it's coming from. So, again, so radicalization, as you said, is such a big theme. So
I think anytime you're judged for something that's beyond your control is going to get under your skin.
You said it perfectly. Even 110%. And in the case of what we're talking about, the political underpinnings of it are actually, in my opinion, sound. I mean, they're not, it's just, I think we're in this age of universal culture shock where everybody has a platform because of social media. So we're hearing from everybody all at once. It's like, whoa, these people really don't like me because of, like what you said, I have a certain immutable traits I was born with, and they really despise me, and they're talking about it openly, and wow. So it's like, you know, so it's a lot of that going on. But and then, of course, like, I had to throw every controversial subject in the pot. And this went very much hand in hand with, like, you know, I wouldn't say I personally had a midlife crisis, but I was definitely, you know, feeling a lull, you know, emotionally. And it was definitely came from a depressed place. And he sort of ends up in a a Me Too kind of scenario. And he says the wrong thing to a woman at the wrong time, and it gets blown out of proportion. And then he gets ostracized by his community. And little by little, that takes him in a violent direction.
Yeah, no. Isolation is a terrible thing to happen to a human being. And
oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's as much as we like to pretend that we don't care what people think. I mean, we're social creatures, so it's like
what did I hear it said? We're a herd species. I think we're all individuals.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, you said it perfectly. And even like oh, I'm sorry. Wait, I thought I just lost the call for a second.
No, we're good. Yep.
Oh, good. Herd species, we think we're all individuals. Like even the biggest nonconformists, like I think on a fundamental level all of us are nonconformists. I mean, everybody's weird. I mean, we all conform to a certain extent just to be social amongst each other. But even
we all wear masks.
Exactly. I think even the most innately peculiar person has social appetites. I mean, it's so funny. I think about people, like I can't dream of killing somebody, but I you hear about people that murder other people, and the narrative around them is that they're devoid of feeling, which I'm sure is true on a basic level. You know, they have, they're sociopathic. On the other hand, I could also see, killing somebody coming from a perversion or a thwarting of empathy, like knowing how that person will feel while they're being killed. I mean, that's part of why people are cruel, because there's a social connection among us. You want your pain to become their pain, So even the most isolated MF-er, I think, has social instincts, even though they're bent out of shape.
Yeah. So, what drew you to the dark thriller genre?
I definitely think, and it's so good that right out the gate we started talking about mental health, because it's definitely, that is the easiest way to answer it. I mean, it's definitely that I have a proximity to my own darkness. I don't know how common it is, but I know it's not terribly common to express or talk about openly. And it's interesting because I don't even necessarily see it as darkness. Like we were talking about with Jung, I mean, it's an aspect of ourselves. It's part of nature.
Yeah.
It's an aspect of the reality we're embedded in. So, but certainly when I was 18 and 19 and I had a breakdown and my OCD symptoms came online and I was like, I was dealing with that for the first time in my life. That was such a before and after marker in my timeline. And it was such a traumatic break. And I recovered from it. I've healed from it. I'm not symptomatic at the moment. Like I've had relapses, but for most of the subsequent 20 some odd years, I've been fine. Like I've been at least 95% better. Like I've had it under control, but it definitely educated me to madness, darkness, just how severe it can get. And just like this idea when I was deep in it, it was, and I've been deep in it, in more recent times, but I'm able to get out of it because I can undertake healing measures for myself. But
that's good.
Which is good, thank you. And it acclimates me to this idea that we're just like, when I'm in it and it's dark, that I sort of start thinking like we're all just like ancient creatures. Like we're as much technology and medicine and measures as we have to help ourselves. Like when I'm in that mode, I'm like, I am just an organism that's broken, and that's like an incredibly staggering thing to walk around with. And a lot of my fiction comes from that, just like the what does it feel like to be walking around in a body in a skeleton with two eyes looking out, and the visceral feeling, the emotions, and that sort of stuff.
All right, yeah, some fascinating stuff.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah, so you also tend to write a lot of horror, right?
Yeah, it tends to get put there because it's uniformly dark. So whether it's like sci-fi or apocalyptic or even Red Dennis, which is more like the publisher was smart to classify it as a thriller before we finalized the cover art. That tends to be the umbrella it all gets put under, because the unifying feature is no matter the genre, the specific genre or subgenre, the darkness is such that it's like, all right, this is horrific, at least in some way.
Yeah. I lost my train of thought.
Oh, cool. All good. I'm surprised.
I was going to bring up David Lynch, because, he writes some really dark stuff, but he does it to like show how right the good stuff is.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And there's so many levels to what these. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I was just curious if there was anything like that for your work or.
In a sense, let me think about that. That is like a really
pessimist. Yeah, because he's like, to appreciate what's good, you have to know what's evil, is, I guess, kind of hit what he is the main theme of his works.
Oh, I totally understand. That makes a lot of sense for him also, because he usually has protagonists that are innocent. Like, they're usually naive. So, and then he, usually the protagonist is kind of like a fictional version of him with the hairstyle and stuff. So, like, so that makes sense. He has a certain connection to naivete. I would say with me, there's not even so much of a good and evil axis functioning. It's more like, I really do think it's a positive thing to admit how effed up we are. Like, I really do think, and I could be idealistic in the sense that it helps the reader feel less lonely. Like, you're going to find your people, you're going to find your fans and your audience that are like, yeah, totally get it. I just get it. And then, and when I've had encounters like in meet space with my readers, there's just a thing, there's just a glare in the gaze where you're like, okay, I'm very flattered that this person picked up what I was putting down, because I can tell they sort of had been in the dark places.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what's next for you in your writing career?
I got a couple things going on. One thing I'll keep like somewhat under wraps, because the team that's working on it agreed to not say much until it becomes a production. Greg F. Gaffune, who's a really powerful author of dark fiction, who's a dear friend of mine, I'm adapting one of his novels into a film. We have to orchestrate the logistics of shooting it in COVID times, but the good news is it involves very few characters. Okay. And we can do it with a skeleton crew. So I'm working on that. And also a buddy of mine, Ian Jarvis, who's a really talented writer and artist, illustrator. He does production design and graphic design for a lot of major league TV shows, like for Marvel and DC and, you know, major streamers and so forth. Him and I are working on a apocalyptic graphic novel. We've been working on this for almost a year now, called Enfest. So it's a music festival where there's apocalyptic elements. And okay. So I'm having fun with that. My part is kind of ending because I co-wrote it with him, but I'm no kind of artist. So he's now actually drawing it, which is kind of amazing because it's like we have $100 million budget to make a movie, but it's all coming out of his pencil. It's like crazy. He's sending me the drawings every day. I'm like, this is insane. Like, so that's pretty exciting.
That does sound exciting. All right.
Cool. Thank you.
So where can our listeners find you on the internet?
The best place, if you're interested in the books, well, I've made a few films too. So all the films are on Amazon Prime. All the books are, you know, First Stop Amazon, Eric Shapiro. And then, Facebook is where I kick around with readers and fellow writers and all that good stuff.
Okay. Just Eric Shapiro on Facebook.
You got it, yeah.
All right. Well, it was really great talking with you, Eric.
Likewise, James. I appreciate you having me.
Yep, you have a good one.
You too. Talk to you later.
All right, bye. Bye-bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com. And follow me on Twitter, @jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.